Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Hearts of LNP, brought to you by the Late Night Poets at allpoetry.com. The group hosts shows every night of the week on a variety of topics to ensure that there is something for everyone to enjoy. And if you want to support our shows, we do have anthologies available on Amazon, which boast a wonderful selection of poetry offered up by the poets of our group. And speaking of our poets, with the gracious permission of several of our members, I have brought a reading list tonight for your listening pleasure. I encourage you to come in, find a comfortable seat, and make yourself at home. I am happily your host, Victoria Frost. Tonight, I'm going to have Pam B joining me. Versus is not feeling well, and so she has stood in his stead for us. We are going to be continuing the conversations on tarnished gold, on those pieces that placed a while ago, but sometimes get buried in the dust as we continue to write and explore. And so we get to delve a little bit into the past and see what beauties and treasures we can find. And Pam, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing great. You know, I have.
So this is the kind of night we're having, but that's okay. We're going to tuck and roll with it, and we're going to have a party while we figure ourselves out, because life is like that sometimes. So I'm going to start us off with a SoundCloud by Poetic Picasso. We do always love when people are able to provide SoundClouds. If you can't call in or you're not comfortable to call in, being able to hear your work in your own voice is such a stellar thing, because we might put inflections and emphasis on parts that the author may not have intended. So we do have a SoundCloud from Poetic Picasso. I am going to welcome Pam back real quick, though. Welcome back, Pam.
Yes. Well, you know, it's just been one of those nights. The earlier show, it took me 3 times to be able to get in. It would let me in, and then it would be like, we're sorry, we're experiencing technical difficulties.
Oh, my goodness. And
then this one, obviously, it felt like it had to hang up on me right away. It's like, nope, you've already spoken too much.
Well, I'm excited to hear your thoughts, even if Blog Talk Radio is choosing to be a little bit more like a fussy teenager tonight. So
there you go. It's going to be an awesome show.
It really is. All right. Well, I'm going to have us start off with a poem in SoundCloud by Poetic Picasso. The link is up, and I'll give this a play.
Mi amor, I am your Latin lover, the beautiful stranger in Casanova. I am the main course of a succulent dish, the sweet taste of Spanish wine in a mouthful of whipped cream. Ooh, join me in the chamber of my privity, as we pluck petals of roses and press them against our lips and kiss. Listen to the romantic strings of the violin playing magnetically the notes of sensual desire in passion. Look into the handsome stare of my eyes and be lost in the erotic color of seduction. Smell the aphrodisiac redolence of the jasmines and lavenders perfuming our noses. Feel the flame of the wax candle of the midnight igniting the fire burning in us. As I taste the honey on your neck and put strawberries in chocolate into your mouth, slowly, slowly. And pour a cruet of oil on your bosom as I nibble your ears with delight and pleasure. I eat the sprinkling nuts on your wet bosom, exciting you with the tip of my tongue, reaching the petals of the poppy. Enwrap you in the silk sheets of my bed, surrounded by the gentle petals we had plucked. Our dripping sweat is the moisture from the drops of oil covering our naked bodies in a passionate embrace. the sounds of our moaning accompanies the intimate whispers in the breeze encompassing us. As our bodies thrust and thrust. Mi amor, mi calor, oh la la. In the poem,
a stunning read and write by Paulette Picasso, and I'm not sure we could start out the night on a better note. Pam, would you mind starting us off with your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I feel like me and you should have gotten like a six-pack of cerveza before we listened to that poem.
Yes.
Right? Help cool us down. Well, it certainly was a steamy note to start the night off with. I did like the background music, how it kind of had that whole feel of like shaking the maracas, and it just, you know, kind of wanted to make you move your hips back and forth. You know, there's a lot, some of the stuff I like in this is, of course, I like his use of food. I thought that was very sensual. The sweet taste of Spanish wine and a mouthful of whipped cream. I thought that was great. And I like that he brought music into it. Listen to the romantic strings of the violin playing magnetically, the notes of sensual desire and passion. Because, you know, to me, sensuality isn't just about what you're looking at, such as a beautiful or naked lover. It's not just about what or who you're touching. It's about the music, the noise, the sounds that surround you, and even the sense of scent. You know, the smell of the rose petals, the smell of your favorite cologne that your lover wears. You know, and I like that he brings into this the feel the flame of the wax candle at midnight, igniting the fire burning in us. But I taste the honey on your neck and put strawberries and chocolate into your mouth slowly. You know, there's the fact that you know, that within this rite, the they are passionately sharing the experience of eating together. You know, I thought, and sharing food, I thought was just a really nice touch that added to the depth of the rite. So beautifully done.
Oh, absolutely. There really is an immersion in this piece. And Frank Poetic Picasso always has a way of doing that. I've often said that he's picked an apt name to write under, because he does paint these vivid, beautiful pictures with his words. And this is definitely no exception. I do appreciate the audio nature of this, the textural nature of this, and even the even the taste of this, because it really does engross us in this moment. And it is very much an erotic poem, in that it is done in such a way that it feels almost as if this is a lover teasing us with what he wants to do with us or do to us. It feels like those afternoon texts that you send to a lover to tease them, to get them excited for what's going to come for the night. And this just leaves you hungry. And I think that's just about the perfect word, because it does feel like a banquet of sorts. I think this is just a really stunning piece. And like you said, the performance really adds a note to it, because here we are getting to be engrossed in this, getting to imagine it. And I think it allows us to be immersed in the story that this is telling. So fantastic, right, Frank? And stunning comment, Pam. Thank you for that. And stunning sound class. All right. Up next, we're going to have The Woman Without a Name by Marius Alexandru. And Pam, could I put you on the spot to read this one for us?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. The Woman Without a Name by Marius Alexandru. And it goes like this. Tied in heavy chains of pain, the flame of faith slowly goes out. So many fights she fought in vain. Her tired soul is full of doubt. So many questions with no answers. All dreams and hopes begin to fade. Still thought she took all given answers. Her life's light darkens shade by shade. There is a little courage left, a mustard seed faith in her heart. She's ready to commit the theft, a touch by faith and a new start. My trembling hands searching for you. So many feet are hurting me. I see your cloak if I get through. A simple touch and I'll be free. I do not care about the crowds. I do not care for their accusing eyes. There is a rainbow, no more clouds. The sun is smiling in the skies. End poem.
Oh my goodness. I think this is such a stunning poem. Because it starts with such a weighted down place, such a dark, hopeless place, and ends on such a beautiful verse of freedom and almost lightheartedness and joy. And it shows that progression. It shows the way in which people can change and move and can evolve. And sometimes it's a new faith found. Sometimes it's someone who loves us and accepts us. Sometimes it's finding a passion in life. But I love this poem, and I can see wholeheartedly why it's won several golds, because in a very simple way, it brings us along on this journey. It gives us a glimpse upon the trials that this woman has overcome. And if I might, I think that this is actually speaking of the woman without a name in the Bible, the one who actually washes Jesus' feet with the perfume. And it was like a year's wage of perfume that she washed his feet with, because biblically she has no name. At least that's what it reads to me, because she would not have come from high in society, but she did one of the most charitable and loving and honoring and worshipful things that could be done. And if you follow the Christian faith, then that also granted her salvation, to have that faith in Christ. So not that this is a religious show, just personal reflection upon this and how it makes me think. And Pam, what did you think of this?
Well, I like that thought. You know, I had thought that it was a story about when Jesus was in the crowd and the sick elderly woman who also had no name that touched his cloak. And I believe those were two different women, but don't quote me on that. They might actually have been the same one. There were actually that's the interesting thing about some of these stories, is that you don't always get the names of the women, but you get the stories and the interactions. What I liked about this, though, that no matter what Bible story or what story it was talking about, if it was, and, you know, it works extremely well as an extended metaphor. And it's not something, like, you know, immediately, you know, it gave both me and you a thought of a Bible story. And it does have that tone to it, but it also works really well for modern day. You know, there are so many people that suffer from invisible illnesses, you know, and who feel like it's so difficult to go on, to move on, to move forward with life. And, you know, what I really like about this is that it reminds us that, you know, it is difficult, but, you know, you just have to have that mustard seed of faith. And your faith can be in whatever it is that, you know, gives you comfort, that helps you to move forward. And what I like about this also is the fact that while it does have, you know, it talks about having faith, it also has lines in it like so many questions with no answers. And I think that is so relatable to anybody who has struggled through life physically, emotionally, psychologically, is that constantly you're bombarded with questions that you can't find those answers to. Sometimes it feels like the answers aren't coming quick enough. And it's all about learning patience, which can be so difficult when you're struggling. You know, I really thought this was just a beautifully expressed right and very well done.
Oh, that was such a stunning comment, Pam. And I agree. I think there are several women in biblically that aren't named, but their acts are so poignant that they are worth mentioning. And it's a reminder
Absolutely.
That sometimes the biggest impact you can have isn't something that's going to make you personally be remembered, but the deed is so poignant that it will never be forgotten. And it even reminds me of the sailor kissing the girl, that old black and white picture when they came back from war.
Yes.
Because it's an act, it's a picture that's so poignant that the names are forgotten. So I love that comment because you're right. It's not just a biblical thing. It is still this modern day, the idea that sometimes that leap of faith is exactly what we need to move forward. And it's hard because thank you for that really fantastic comment, Pam. And up next, we're going to have Let Me Write Minimally by Mr. Farhan Ahmed. Let me write minimally. Why use flowery words? Why use metaphors, anecdotes, similes? Why write in meteoric form? Why follow strict rules? Poetry is an art, and art is freedom, a mirror of to the artist's unique, distinct soul. Beauty is subjective, and my subjective eyes find beauty in minimalism when it comes to writing. So let me write the way I wish. Let me write minimally. Let me write unpretentiously. End poem. And Pam, would you start us off with your thoughts?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know if Mr. M. Farhan Ahmad wants to hear my thoughts, but I'll share them anyways. I agree with what he says, that poetry is an art form, and I definitely agree with what he says at the end, where he says, let me write the way I wish. Let me write minimally. Let me write unpretentiously. I would never deny somebody the gift of writing how they wish and expressing themselves how they wish. But over and over again, in the first part, he says, why write, why use flowery words? Why use metaphors, similes? Why write in metrical forms? Why do we do these? We do these things because art comes in many forms, and some forms of poetry are more enhanced by meter. Some forms of poetry are more enhanced by the form itself and by the use of metaphor. They are all poetic devices for a reason. It's like any other art form. You know, yeah, you can do an abstract painting, which has no rules, and it can be absolutely stunning. But you can also do a landscape painting, a realism painting. There are many forms of artwork throughout history that follow patterns, especially landscape when it comes to depth perception, that are absolutely needed for that form. So with all due respect to this lovely poet here who has shared his work with us, yes, I absolutely agree. He should be able to write minimally and unpretentiously, but dang it, some people should be allowed to write in meter and follow their strict rules, use their metaphors and their similes, and be just as cherished. So that's what I have to say.
No, and I think that's such a stunning comment. No, I think that's such a stunning comment. Because, yes, there are definitely poets who like, and I mean, I do write brevity, I do write free verse, but there are some of those poems that just call for a rhyme and for a meter and for, you know, like I think a VNL, I think of the VNL, which has specific lines in those specific places. I interpret this not as a call that all poets should write however they wish, or should ignore the rules of some of the games, because you're right, like any form of art, there are some that go with rules. Like you mentioned, the abstract and the surrealism. But what I like about this piece is it actually reminds me of an early interaction I had on All Poetry. And you know this, Pam, because you've heard my thought process, especially when it comes to rhyme, and it's always been my biggest gripe. I actually love rhyming poems. I enjoy writing in rhyme when it goes with the poem, not when it takes away from the poem. But there are definitely poets that I've read that use rhyme as a crutch. The poem has, especially when they're young, they're learning, and rhyming is the easiest. A rhyming poem doesn't necessarily make like a poem, if you know what I mean. Like hug and bug can be said so many times, but that doesn't mean that there's a ton of complexity and beauty. Like a first grader's art project, it's beautiful for a first grader, but it's not something that the world as a whole is going to look at and be like, oh my God. Not to sound harsh, but I hosted a contest well before I'd ever really gotten involved in the site, just as a, you know, one of those level things. And I put in there, you know, I will be critical of a rhyme poem because they're, I don't think that it should be that easily relied upon, just like simile and metaphor and alliteration and assonance. There has to be more value than just a few rhyming words. But it's the most abused from my experience. And there was a poet that went on a crusade, even though if they'd gone and looked through some of my other works, I do have rhyming. I did have rhyming works even back then, off on me on how I'm not a poet because I don't know how to rhyme. And it was like, come on, dude. Like, if that's all you think poetry is, and it's frustrating. But there are those that think that a poem isn't a poem unless it rhymes. A poem isn't a poem unless it has iambic pentameter meter. A poem isn't a poem unless it uses a classical form. Never mind that there are new forms being developed. Never mind that there are brevities and ultra brevities. And never mind that poetry is this beautiful, vast thing. And so to me, I read this poem as one of those responses to perhaps a critic who says, you don't write poetry because, and it makes me think of artists who like, oh good Lord, what's his name? The one who chopped off his ear, who painted Starry Night.
Oh, Van Gogh.
Yes, Van Gogh. He was criticized the entire time he was alive. He was told that his work wasn't beautiful. The entire time he was alive, he did not gain popularity or appreciation until after his passing, which is pretty common. But it is definitely one of those things where I read this poem as a response to a critic who's saying, you don't know what you're doing because so many beautiful forms and so many beautiful words and so many beautiful paintings and music and just everything has come out of someone breaking the rules. And so to me, I read this as kind of that response to a critic, you know? I don't know why that reminded me, but this is just a fun story that kind of goes along with that. When I was in high school, I was I actually went to Whitworth University on a violin and vocal scholarship. And, part of that was I had to go in, I had to play for the orchestra professor, and then I also had to give a presentation. And so I played Handel's Sixth Sonata in E minor. And the history of that work is that Handel was relatively unknown. And so he claimed this particular script, he claimed that he had actually found them and that he was bringing them to the public eye. All the while, he's the one who actually wrote the whole symphony, the whole piece. And so it reminds me even of like the artist who hid their work in order to present it to the public because they might not have been appreciated otherwise. So random, but it popped into my head. So I think this was a stunning piece. So yeah. And thank you, Pam, because I think that there's validity too in appreciating the classical forms as they are and understanding that what might work for you doesn't work for others, because Lord knows if you give me a pen or a paintbrush, I am definitely going to butcher some canvases. So it does not make it art.
I know that feeling.
Oh, okay. Moving on. Up next, we have Together by Jess Goldme. And Pam, would you give this one a read?
I would be happy to. All right. Together by Just Old Me. And it goes like this. Front seat driving Friday night, a pink moon, sky speckled light. Friends are laughing, radio plays, strumming chorus, downshift days. Smiles forming, tension soft, stars are shining as we drive off. Roads are winding, shadows, pine trees, nature calling, fresh summer breeze. Party at Mike's place, we roll in quite late, not that I care, I'm out with my date. End poem.
Beautiful read, Pam, and what a delightful piece by Just Told Me. It's almost fitting because so often we, if we can savor just who we are, if we can savor just a moment, if we can savor simplicity, and sometimes that's the most beautiful moments that you can capture. So I think his pen name is so fitting for this piece. What I love about it, though, is that it shows the way in which we can allow ourselves to understand that while in the grand scope of things, we are small and immaterial, that it does not mean that the rest of the world cannot be small and material. Placing value in this moment, placing value in this time, driving with your date. I think that it's just a beautiful capturing of the night, of the beauty of the moment. It doesn't have to be these big grand adventures. It can be just being there with someone. And it actually reminds me of when my husband and I were moving from Florida back to Washington. And there was, we drove because we had some stuff we had to take. We had some cars that we had to move. And so we drove, and there were moments there where it was just us and the midnight sky driving on a road to get to the next stop. And those are some of my most valued moments because the rest of the world is quiet. And all that matters in that moment is just us in the car getting to talk and spend that time together. And so I think that this is just a really stunning capture because not only is it anybody who's experienced a moment like that. So really beautiful, beautiful, right? And Pam, what did you think of this?
I really enjoyed this. And I liked how you talked about it capturing a moment, you know, and how, you know, some of the most precious time that we spend together is that one-on-one alone time in the car. You know, I feel like first of all, this poem would have fit so well on our the show we had at Rhythm and Rhyme tonight, because we were doing poetry inspired by early 1960s British rock, and so many of the songs and the poetry had that tone of just taking that drive with your friend, your lover, your fam, like just really enjoying the moment, enjoying the experience of life. But I'm glad to be able to hear this. This is one of those poems that really just makes you happy, at least speaking for myself, to listen to it. And I feel like when it comes to driving places, nowadays we really are too focused on getting to the destination rather than enjoying the journey. And I feel within a few short lines, he really captures that idea of joining, enjoying the journey. And I like that he's like, party at Mike's place. We roll in quite late. Not that I care. I'm out with my date. There's a real small town feel to this. You know, like earlier I was talking with Tom and Rex, and we were talking about small town bars and, you know, like, you know, being out driving and, you know, obviously not promoting drunk driving, but, you know, but just, you know, enjoying those moments with friends. And to me, this really has that really, you know, fun, small-town vibe. And like I said, just being all about really enjoying life. And so I thought it was very well done.
And I love that comment because I think you're right. We've become so distracted with our technology and so in a rush to get from point A to point B that we forget the adventures and memories and moments in the in-between. You know, instead we sit on our phones and ignore the world around us. And so I love your comment. Those times when perhaps technology wasn't as prevalent and intrusive in our lives, those moments when a night out with the friends really was going and spending that time pointedly without interruption with these people and just living in that moment with those people. Whereas now you're just a ding away from another conversation with someone who's not even there. And you remind me even of the idea that we live in we live more connected than we ever have before and also so very disconnected because of how we approach our relationships with people now. So for that absolutely stunning comment, and I'm definitely going to have to listen to that playback because I didn't get to call in to the early show, but it sounds like you guys had a blast. So.
Yeah, it was a fun show. Great
topic. I think any show with like you and Rex and Thomas is just going to have amazing conversation because just knowing all three of you, all I can imagine is the meeting of the minds. So,
yeah, and it's mostly them being troublemakers and me being good. So, yeah.
I mean, but that's what you're here for. You're the Kevin of late night poets. You make sure that we all stay in line when we're supposed to.
I'm just picking on them. I don't think I do that good.
All right, well, up next, we do have another SoundCloud. This one is by Mr. M for his piece called Exponential Darkness. And I'll get this going for us.
This poem was inspired by a quote from Virginia Woolf that says, "I feel all shadows of the universe multiply deep inside my skin." The poem is called Exponential Darkness. In me, the baleful void teems with woeful resonance. The vibrations shake me to what is left of the crumbling core, manifesting its uneasiness through mental lashings. Perhaps I smile one too many times. Maybe I stray too far from the malefic tether at one time or another, threatening the very fabric of the darkness woven within my internal universe. There, the specks of light that you see reflecting off of the shards of brokenness are merely the refractions of the last light of hope coming to its inevitable conclusion. The remnants of stardust have lost their glow and drift seamlessly into the void's terrible pool. They suffer the same fate as each dissipated grain of failed dreams and lost wishes. The darkness, it revels in its multitudes, contently cavelling in the cosmic tomb, since it knows it has finally won.
stunning read and write by Master M. And Pam, would you mind starting us off with your thoughts on this piece?
Absolutely. As always, just top-notch dark writing. You know, it's good to hear him, his voice again on the shows with his recordings that he makes. A wonderful reading voice. You know, I've also seen him in a couple of my dark contests, so that's been really cool. I like the phrase in the beginning where it says, the vibrations shake me to what is left of the crumbling core, manifesting its uneasiness through mental lashings. I feel like the whole idea of mental lashings is the way we talk down to ourselves inside our heads, either because we're repeating voices of other people that have talked down to us in our life, or because we simply just don't struggle to like ourselves. I also thought it was really intriguing with the line, I smiled one too many times. Maybe, perhaps I smiled one too many times. Maybe I stayed too far from the malefic tether at one time or another. I like the idea that this character in this poem, this person in this poem, is trying to figure life out, is trying to figure fate out. And why, what it is they are being punished for. Then it, near the end where it says, the darkness, it revels in its multitude, contently keveling in the cosmic tomb, since I know it has finally won. The personification of darkness, it comes across as, to me, as almost like the personification of depression. And there's such a feeling of hopelessness captured in those end lines. You know, it's a beautifully done right.
That was such a stunning comment, Pam. And I really loved, too, even the reflections that you had in that. You made me think about not just the personification of depression in the sense that so often it can seem like depression is something that is actively dragging us down and trying to devour us. But even that idea of shame, if you will, and I think what's so stunning about shame is that often, and so in a personal bubble, because this is how I think, often in my therapy, when I think that something might be taken in a way that would look bad upon me. So if I'm worried that, you know, that it seems common sense to everybody else, but it's not common sense to me, then I would say, well, you know, it's stupid. And my therapist was like, Victoria, why do you think that's stupid? And I can tell them why, but in the end, it tends to be this reflection upon my own self that I don't see validity in what I say or what I think or why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling. Because naturally someone who wasn't in struggling with things the way I struggle with them, not that I'm the only one who struggles with things, but, obviously, nobody else could possibly do that. And it's such an interesting thing to reflect upon in an outside perspective, because obviously I'm not the only one to ever struggle with the problems I have. And there's problems that you have, Pam, that I'm sure you struggle with, that other people also struggle with as well. But sometimes when we are surrounded by darkness and we're surrounded by shame and we're surrounded by depression, we have this idea in our head that we're the only one, that we're the abnormality, when in reality, everybody has their own version of the same demons. And in regards to this piece, I love it because there is kind of that exploration of the dark and understanding of this is where he's at, and either an embrace of it because there is nothing else to do, a surrendering to it because it's the only option. But still there is that self-presence that is in it, which is a reminder that we do not become our darkness. We do not become our depression. We do not become our demons. They may at times overwhelm us, but we remain. They don't destroy us. They just sometimes make us have to shift the way that we interact with the world. So, just absolutely a stunning right. So thank you, Master M, for that, as well as for the SoundCloud, as we always do appreciate that. And up next, we are going to have Zero by A Rite of Passage, and I will give this one a read. Zero by A Rite of Passage. No time, no space, no beingness, no object of beingness, nothing. Our minds writhe at the consanya, the concept of a state in which nothingness becomes the two cuneiform indents between quantitative indications that something, anything, exists. The idea this implies a spark in the synapses between the brain cells that implies space in nothing. There is no space. What gives words meaning but the negative space around them? We vomit out the idea, thus leading our stomachs empty, void, zero. And Pam, would you mind starting us off with your comment?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to do that. I like that she focused in on the number zero. You know, I thought this was a wonderfully thought-provoking write. You know, as you and I have discussed before, and I've told you, I struggle with mathematics. But there is something fascinating I find about it. And I think particularly how it has expanded throughout history, how it started out as something so simple. Like, I remember you did that one contest on that stick that was supposed to be the first thing ever found of recording, making a counting days, keep like a calendar type thing. And I like how she says in here, the concept of a state in which nothingness becomes the two cuneiform indents between quantitative indications that something, anything exists. Immediately people, you know, even before numbers were invented, there was probably, I'm sure, this whole idea that you could look with your eyes and see that there was something unfair, that there was a smaller amount and a bigger amount. And then as numbers came into play, you know, it's just fascinating to think about the history of numbers, the history of mathematics, and how we not only that we decided that in order to be aware that there was something out there, that you had to be aware that there's nothing out there also. There is no space that gives words meaning, but the negative space around them. We vomit out the idea, thus leaving our stomachs empty, void. I thought that really just was a really edgy and hard-hitting ending, and the whole idea of those words that we really take time to, you know, that we use the words that mean something, that are from our hearts, and then there are the words that we just simply vomit out. This kind of reminds me of one of my all-time favorite movies, The Neverending Story, where they're trying to describe the nothing. And the one character says, so it's a whole? And it's like, well, no, because a whole would be something. You know, I don't know if you've ever watched that movie and remember that part, but that's kind of what this makes me think of, is the whole idea that a whole would be something. You know, just a really thoughtful right, and I see she had one gold in it, and that's very well deserved.
Excuse me, but I too was traumatized by the Swamp of Sadness. One thing.
Oh my God, I'm gonna tear up now thinking of that.
I know. It's like, oh, they wonder what's wrong with, like,
I'm picking my head already.
Gen Xers, elder millennials.
Yeah, yes. We can only help people.
Come on,
older,
you can do it. You can do it. And the horse is sinking. Oh, I'm getting goosebumps and I'm sad. Oh, Pam, why did you have to bring that up?
I'm sorry.
No. It's a perfect representation of exactly what the nothing is. Really, so we know like even space ends. They know that space ends, and beyond the end of space is nothing. And our minds, scientifically, our minds struggle to truly understand what nothing is, because if we think of blackness, that's something. If we think of like this, and I think of Coraline, where the other world disappears, you know, even that bright white is something. We cannot think in the concept of absolute nothing. And so I love that you use that, as much as it's never ending story, like is a trigger for sadness. It's a stunning movie though too. Like it's truly a stunning movie. But even with that in mind, I love that you brought that up, because it is such a poignant thing of nothingness. And in this poem, I appreciate that she even has those spacing between words, the emphasis of the words, by putting them in these spots in and of themselves. So she says, what gives words meaning but the negative space around them? And we like to think that language, mathematics, music, what have you, that there's something to give meaning to everything. But sometimes things are more poignant because the opposite literally just breaks our mind. Like the idea of nothing. We can understand anything. We cannot visualize nothing. And so I think that this is fantastic, because in many ways we use words to explain things. We use art to explain things. We use music to explain things. We use mathematics to explain things. But each of those too have their limits. We can never get, we only have the words that we have to explain the things that we are feeling, emotions, which are hard to explain, because I may feel love differently than another. I may feel anger differently than another. And what my version of anger is could be frustration to someone else. And yet we seem to think that these words all mean the same, that we feel the same with each of these words. And so it shows the limitation of those words. It shows the limitation of art in conveying what the artist sees. The music falls flat, no pun intended, in the symphonies that are played in the minds of a musician, and numbers even. Our brain can explode trying to think of what goes beyond a quadrillion, quadzillion, what have you. There's numbers that are undiscovered because they never end, and infinite. Is another one. Nothing and infinite. Our brains just don't comprehend those because we start to lose the words. We start to lose the ability to think that big and that, well, nothing. So I think this is really, really quite stunning, because it really makes you stop and sit and think. And it even too reminds me, because I grew up in a family of scientists. If you zero down on atoms and you get down to the electrons and the protons and the neutrons and all of that, there's space between the atoms. So my brother always liked to tease me that if you tap the wall, eventually your finger will actually go through that wall, because everything will line up in just the way that the space between the things that make us will line up. And in essence, the wall will not exist and your finger will not exist to each other. And so this even makes me think of that as we start thinking down so tiny to the smallest things that make up life and things as we know it. There too is space and potentially nothingness. So anyways, it kind of blows my mind. It makes me short circuit a little bit, if you will, but I think it's such a stunning piece in the sense that it makes us stop and ruminate on life and what we know and nothing. And how do we even value worth if in the end nothing can overwhelm us? So yeah, that's where my brain's at. So Pam, you got anything to add before I move on?
I just have to say, I really like those thoughts. I thought they were very well expressed.
Thank you. Because my brain is sort of short-circuiting right now, so I appreciate that. Up next, we have Words by Daniel Dischino. And Pam, would you give this one a read for us?
Absolutely. All right, Words by Daniel Dischino. And it goes like this. Of the lives we touch, of the power that each word wields, a secret chat with a bonded mate, the thank you of a stranger on a crowded street, tell me the difference. So guarded are the words I let in. How guarded are the words I let out. Words of power, words of passion, words of intellect, and words of innocence. Words to cause wars above all other weapons. Words to comfort and head amidst all wars. And I'm sorry, words to comfort and heal amidst all wars. I think so hard for years sometimes on words that penetrate my skin, yet how quickly are the words I shout a weapon from within. In the quiet evening after the chaotic energy of the sun has let me be, as my demons release into the night, I stand free and peaceful to wish upon thoughts. O universe from which I came, please give me an army strength, not the strength to attack, but the strength to refrain. Please give me a scholar's intellect, not to understand within, but to help those without. Please give me the magic of a wizard, not to distort nature, but to displace a sense of wonder to others. And please bring me back to my animal roots, like the noble birds who have conquered the third dimension, not like a hawk whose power is spent on innocent prey, but like the wild dove whose beauty and joy brings hope to all who behold, and whose mere silhouette brings a symbol of peace to mankind. End poem.
Beautifully read, Pam. And what a stunning write by Daniel Dischino. I think what's so amazing about this is that it reminds me of how society has kind of progressed. So I joke that, like my name, I live by Victorian standards, or at least I try to. But some of those would be that you don't speak about religion and politics. You don't speak about a person who's not there that can't defend them. And if greeted on the street, you greet back. It doesn't mean that you're friends, but it does have this level of cordialness and to be uncouth and rude and rowdy was just viewed as uncivil, because there is nothing uncivil about being kind, if you will. And I think too about today, modern time, and there was actually a Reddit. There was, I don't know the gender of the Redditor, but they like to do old jingles, like 90s, 80s, and 90s jingles. And Reese's used to have one about, you know, you put my chocolate in your peanut butter or something like that. And they ended up quoting that one in a meeting that was talking about two teams, the marketing and one of the other ones that had to come together and had to work as a team. It was like chocolate and peanut butter, two very different things, but they were going to work together to create this beautiful thing. And they ended up getting called into HR because the HR lady and the coworker who thought it was directed at them thought that it was sexual harassment. And it brings up the question in our modern day of, if we are expected to think about another person at the extent that it makes us forego who we are, even though what you're doing is benign, then who's in the right and who's in the wrong? Because we have this label of right and wrong and the idea that everything must be thought, and that without a conversation, action must be taken. And I even think of cancel culture that is so prominent as of late, that people are nixed and judged without an opportunity to explain, in the assumption that society and that are those that are quick to judge or quick to be offended are obviously in the right. And it loses the ability to have conversations that allow us to grow. And sometimes, yeah, it is black and white, but a lot of times there's also gray. And so now we even have, if you say something kind to people, you have to worry about if you're sexually harassing them. Or, you know, I think that it's a beautiful thing to tell random people if they look good, because who, you know, and it's not like a, hey, you look good. It's like, oh my God, I love your dress. Look, that's a really pretty dress. But even that can be mistaken in this day and age. And so I know that even myself have pulled back from doing that at the concern that people will not appreciate the words for what they are. And so this poem really makes me think of that, because we say we are enlightened, and yet in so many ways, we are taking away from people. We are taking away from the history of things. We are taking away from the beauty and the simplicity and the culture that some things come from, all for the sake of our personal two cents. And so I think this is just a really stunning piece, because to me it calls us back to those times when we at least could be civil, when we would at least know that sometimes we just need to hold our tongue, and that not everything has to be attacked or corrected, because not everything necessarily needs correction. Sometimes it just needs understanding or an opportunity to create dialogue. So I think this is actually quite a thoughtful and stunning write. So, and Pam, what did you think having read it?
Well, first of all, that was a wonderful comment there. I really like this. I like the message of how it talks about the power of words and how we can choose to use them as weapons, or we can choose to use them as something that helps people grow, that helps ourselves grow. I really like how the last stanza, which is the longest of all the stanzas, and is prayer-like. It's that prayer that's, you know, goes out to the universe. Oh, universe from which I came, please give me an army strength, not the strength to attack, the strength to refrain. I think that's something that we tend to forget, that sometimes and oftentimes it takes more strength to hold yourself back, you know, when somebody offends you, than, oh my goodness, I did not yawn in the middle of a comment because I thought I was boring or the poem was boring. I just...
It is late. It is late, and I have had two cups of coffee to be here. So you're good.
Right. I don't even usually drink. Like, this is the time of night where I usually switch to herbal or decaf green tea, and I'm drinking black just to have a little bit of a pick me up. But I like mentions, please bring me back to my animal roots. You know, like the whole idea, it makes me think of the whole Native American idea of having, and I think there's other religions that have this too, is that whole idea of having an animal spirit guide. I like how he mentions things like, and I'm going back to the beginning, is where he says, secret chat with a bonded mate, the thank you of a stranger on a crowded street, tell me the difference. Everything we say can make an impact on somebody, positive or negative, you know, and sometimes even the things we don't say, like some people just need someone to listen to them. They don't need input, you know, they don't need an opinion, they don't need you to guide them. They simply, with your words, or criticize them with your words. They just simply want someone to listen to them. And I just think this is a powerful right about language and about the desire to be a better person. So excellent right and very well done.
Oh, I love that comment, Pam, because you're right. Sometimes it is just about being a better person for yourself, even if you know the rest of the world is not going to join you. And perhaps if everybody did that, then we would be in a much, much better world. But until then, sometimes it's just that one small act a day that we do that can make a difference. So thank you for that fantastic comment. All right, up next, we have a poem by Versus Goliath, and I will give this one a read.
Are you there, Victoria? I can't hear you.
I made it back. I dropped.
Oh, okay.
I got jealous of you dropping early in the show and figured that it was my
All right.
Turn.
Okay, so I see you're actually in both spots now. So there's now two Victorias.
Well, that may be a doppelganger, but yes. I wanted us to have more for the party, right?
Yeah, exactly. There should always be more than one Victoria.
Absolutely. All right. So this is Wizard of Oz by Versus. He was a 6'4" bundle of MMA mass. Boy, what's up, mate? Lifting me off the ground easily. Good to see you too, Bryce. Bear hugged words. What's crackin'? Get a slab of tinnies, can I? Yeah. Yeah. Sounds good, mate. Only after I sit down. Where's the feckin' loo? I've been saved a pulpa for ya. Fingers Polish sausage prod at my side. Feckin' hilarious, mate. Next time I'm over, I'll return the favor. His gigantic smile fades. Don't you dare do that. I'm a doomy in me home. That hollowed ground's sacred, mate. The grin quickly reappeared across his face as he took off carrying out his flagrant fecal expression. It was my 7th foster. The phone filled me 2 beers ago, hiking a black, watching sun turn rainbows. You know, there's something brilliant about the dry desert sunset. Get tossed. We're 2 blokes staring at the sky. Don't start reading me poetry. A note saved for later, the indescribable essence of friendship banter, that openness to say hurtful things playfully, quick-witted sparring of jocular companionship. Your freckin' bloto ain't your mate, staring off into nothing like look a little like a meerkat. I pulled my hands into my chest and snuffed the air, make rapid movements and click my teeth. Merely looking out for you, mate. I laughed and started up the jagged hillside again. What goes up must come down, I quipped as my Aussie friend had a chunder, or at least that's what I thought he said as he expelled 10 cans of ale into a bird's nest. And here I thought I was the one too drunk for this adventure. Double birds flipped my way before another chunder erupted thunderously from my buddy, making no friends down under, my addled brain too focused on laughing to help for a moment. Thankfully, civility returned, and I handed him a bottle of water. Swig, sit, crikey, mate. I'm gobsmacked by the sight of it. Indeed, it was a green brow terror to behold, an acidic carnage waterfall that ravaged the rock face below. Let's head back to the house. Get a hot cuppa. Yuppers. That sliced bread, mate. We giggled like schoolboys frolicking down the hill, stumbling like the drunk fools who we were. End poem. And Pam, would you start off?
I'd be happy to. First of all, awesome read there. I can see why he won gold in this contest. This is just absolutely delightful. His use of the Aussie slang and the conversational tone, and I like how laid back this was. Also, that title is really awesome, The Wizard of Oz, you know, because you know, I've never been to Australia, but what I've seen of it on videos, it just seems like one of those Wizard of Oz type places. You know, I like that there's such a sense of laid-back friendship. I really like your fecking blotto, ain't you, mate, staring off into nothing, look like a meerkat. That is just hilarious imagery because you immediately can picture the meerkat standing around just looking all around and some little guy just looking all confused. You know, there's something about, you know, male friendships that, you know, like the whole bonding by slugging each other on the shoulder and you know they care about each other, but they have to show it in that kind of manly way. And I found this just extremely entertaining. I really like bear hug the words, what a crack and get slap a teenies when you kick off the shit can, the use of the dialect, not only the slang, but the fact that he put the slang in more of that kind of Australian accent, and so I thought that was just really well done. Did I ever tell you about the first time I kind of met a couple of Australian guys?
No, do tell.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so me and this is back when I was in my 20s, and it didn't really count a whole lot as a meeting, but so I was in my 20s. I had gone home. I'd been on it with a friend of mine and had gone home early because I wasn't as much of a party girl as she was. And around 3 in the morning, like after bar closing, she came home, well, back to my house, with a couple of guys from Australia. But she didn't call me ahead of time, and I was sound asleep in my bed. She had them come into my room, and I woke up to two guys standing over my bed. And thank
Whoa.
Goodness they – yeah, no, it was a really scary moment. But thankfully, they turned out to be extremely polite. Because the thing is my bed was actually up against the wall, and you know how you wake up – and my friend was only like 5'2", so she was there – but she was, I couldn't see her. So my bed's up against this wall. And when you're in a situation like that, you go into flight or fight mode. But I had no choice but to go into fight mode and just came up swinging. And they ran, thankfully, as I said, must have been nice young men because they ran out of the house apologizing profusely in these thick Australian accents. And my friend, I occasionally like to remind her of this. She was so drunk, I started chewing her ass out. And the only response she had was, but they had such sexy accents. And I was like, and did you think I was going to take time to hear their accents before I started swinging?
Oh my gosh, that is gold.
But I did enjoy Versus Home.
Note to self, never surprise Pam with sexy Australian men when she's sleeping.
Yeah, call ahead of time. You know, if you call me and you say, Pam, I'm coming to your house with sexy Australian men, I'll be like, good day, mate. I'm game. But don't surprise me.
Oh, my gosh. I love that. I love that so much. You remind me, I had a in college, I had a roommate. She was my best friend in college, and she had no flight or fight response. She just had play dead. So if you scared her enough, she would just sit down. And
oh my goodness.
I mean, it's kind of off topic, but it's not because of your story. But it was so funny because I found the best way the first time I ever got her was we were in an apartment. So we had two bathrooms, and it was a two-bedroom, two-bathroom apartment. And so she'd gone to go, like, take a shower or something. And I sat outside, like, on the ground outside the bathroom door when I heard her, like, turn off the water. Because then when she, like, opens the door, I was like, hello! And she just, like, sits down. It was so funny.
Oh, my gosh. The poor girl. That's funny.
It was great. I mean, the rest of the year, like, she would prank me and I would prank her. So it was all in good fun. But you definitely just, like, reminded me of that fun little thing. But I will be sure to always let you know if I'm ever going to bring sexy Australian men over to your place, because we don't need an international incident. Oh, I agree with you, though. This is such a stunning piece. And I'm going to apologize in advance. I definitely butchered the Australian accent. I think for a while there I was, like, doing an Irish accent, and then I just gave up. But this is and of course, no harm intended. Just poor accents on my part. But I think this is such a stunning piece that does kind of capture the speaking, the kind of playfulness, the banter, the beauty that you can see between friends, be both of them Australian or from somewhere from just two different cultures appreciating each other and for what they are. And there's such a playfulness in this, the way that they interact with each other, the fact that, you know, you have that teasing between men to kind of tussle their feathers, if you will. I think that this is just so effectively done that it creates this beautiful story that at least I think everybody's gone through that night in which you drink probably too much. And you have to find your way back, but all the while beauty and playfulness between friends. And I think that was just really captured. And he just happened to be able to put it in a way that let us look at an Aussie culture even. And so I think this was a really, really fun piece. It definitely reads more like a short story to me than a poem, but definitely well worth the gold that it earned. So thank you, Versus, for sharing this, and hopefully you'll be back with us next week, and then maybe we'll make you read it in a terrible Australian accent, or at least one better than mine. Right? Right.
He actually made a SoundCloud of it. So if anybody gets a chance, they should listen to his SoundCloud, because he does attempt to do an Australian accent. He says in his AM that he knows it sounds more British, but you know.
I should have checked that. I just expected him to call in and read it live because, you know, that's just my expectation.
Yeah. Yep. It would have been mine too.
All right. Well, up next, we have Little Crow by Robbie's Poetry. And Pam, would you give this a read?
Absolutely. All right. This is Little Crow by Robbie's Poetry. And it goes like this. Little crow, sitting on a wire, what brings you joy and what brings you ire? What thoughts travel through your adolescent avian form? What thoughts fill you with terror and what thoughts keep you warm? I see you bask in the sunlight and I wonder, where do you go during the storm? I delight in your almost comical visage, knowing you will grow into magnificence. A corvid crowned with the glory of intelligence, mischievous avian trickster of the world since time born. I feel privileged and delighted to have gazed up on you in youth. With your large beak and still small frame, I know I will see you once again someday when you are fully grown. End poem.
Oh, what a wonderful piece. I really love the almost sing-song nature in which this begins. You know, little crow sitting on a wire. It looks like doppelganger me has decided to disconnect. So I'm going to make my comment real quick, and then I'll move over. I'll have to call back in while you're making yours. But I love the almost sing-song nature that this piece plays with. The idea of befriending a crow by seeing the beauty of it, the corvid crown, the intelligence that comes with it, knowing that their beak is large and their tiny frame is going to grow. And it reminds me of the way in which you can befriend crows and they will defend you and they will bring you treasures. And this to me is like meeting one of those little crows and starting that connection, that desire to know them more and appreciate them more, especially because I think ravens and crows are vastly misunderstood. And so the way in which he speaks of it almost lovingly, I think it's a really beautiful thing to see because they are beautiful, majestic birds. And yet here it is, this is little things on appreciation, knowing what it will grow into. I think this is such a delightful piece. And Pam, would you mind sharing your thoughts?
I'd be happy to. I really enjoyed this write all the way through. But my particular favorite parts were that first stanza, which had a Mother Goose-like rhyme feel to it and made me think of, you know, the whole idea of just wondering what that bird is thinking about, what the bird feels. I also like where he mentioned a corvid crowned with the glory of intelligence, and she was even trickster of the world since time was born. That made me think about how there's so many cultures and myths, like mythologies, that the crow is a part of and is often seen as the trickster. I also like that he ends with, "I know I will see you once again someday when you are fully grown," because that reminds us that, you know, the crows will come back. You know, they're born somewhere, or if they're somewhere where they've been fed and taken care of, they have a tendency to be very loyal and to keep coming back. So I just thought this was a wonderful tribute to crows and very well done.
I love at least the portion of your comment that I got to hear, because you'd mentioned that often crows are kind of seen as this trickster, where they have kind of that negative vibe to them. And yet there is that beauty and that loyalty in the way in which they'll return. As crows, tricksters, they are intelligent. They are able to set traps, but they are not always the creatures that lore tends to portray them as. And so I loved your comment because it also shows that more loyal side that makes them endearing and enjoyable. So thank you for that stunning comment, Pam, taking that comment in my stead. Up next, we have Tears in Moonlight by Simon Guest, and I'll take this read. Tears shone in moonlight, each reflecting the disappearing shape of his obsession. The ring dropped. And boom. And Pam, would you start us off with your comment?
Absolutely. I tell you, I like when a poem tells a story with a brevity. I mean, because that takes some talent. You know, I mean, instantly, you know, he establishes, not a wasted word, he establishes that there's sadness, the disappearing shape of his obsession, the ring drops. I mean, you really don't need any more lines to see that, you know, somebody's proposal has been, you know, not accepted. And to feel the emotion behind the moment. And more than the tears, I think the last line, the ring dropped, really conveyed the emotion of the piece, because it is almost a gesture. It's a gesture of futility, of giving up, of feeling like there is no hope. So just a stunning brevity and very well done.
Oh, I think that was such a remarkable comment too, Pam, because you're right. This does, in a very effective way, walk us through a hard moment. We can feel the emotions drop. We can feel the sadness. We can feel the despair even as that ring drops. And the idea that this is taking place at night, it sets up such a beautiful picture that for it to end that way, for us to end the depths of love that this man had and to see them lose it, it's king and it's stunning. And so I'm so glad that he shared this, because I do think that this is such a remarkable piece. It definitely does not waste a single word. So thank you for this, Simon. And thank you for your stunning comments, Pam. Up next, we're going to have LG Mays, Artistic Butterflies Dancing. And Pam, would you give this one a read?
I'd be happy to. All right. Artistic Butterflies Dancing by LG Mace. And it goes like this. Butterflies artistically, surrealistically created, doily cut out patterns on their delicate wings. Different avant-garde pictures celebrate in brilliant colors the song their heart sings. Kissed in starlight as they dance between the golden lines, the dance of the artistically created butterfly defines. Flying so gaily in their surrealistic power, they are nature's answer for flying flower. These butterflies are special. They were dreamed up in some artist's mind. You might find some that are similar, but these are one of a kind. Dancing freely in the unseen wind, they shall never be plasterboarded or pinned. They dance to music only they can hear. Somewhere in the dream of man, inspiration sphere and poem, or sphere, sorry. And something was in those words. I apologize.
No. You did fantastic. And this is such a beautiful, beautiful write. Not only because it speaks of kind of maybe that appreciation of watching the way in which butterflies kind of dance. I have a home that I own in Florida. And if you know, in Florida, the milkweed plant is protected, the green leaf, green flowering milkweed, in part because it's going extinct, but also because monarch butterflies, which are at risk, feed off of it. And so in many ways, this poem reminds me of planting them in part because of the butterflies. I also planted them because the HOA claimed that I had weeds in my garden. So me being vindictive, decided to plant weeds in my garden that would be protected by the state. But there's a beauty in this. There's a beauty in watching those butterflies dance, which I know that my tenant gets to see. And I remember seeing it when I lived there. And there's a beauty in seeing the way in which they fly and they flutter. And knowing that that beauty is finite because they are free. And no one is going to get to capture them and kill them and preserve them. And so their unique beauty is their own. And it reminds me, it's spooky season, it's fine. It reminds me of the line from Lestat in Queen of the Damned, where he speaks that the beauty of humans is that we are finite creatures. And when we start to appreciate things as they are, even if there are similar creatures around, we are able to appreciate the world and life as it is, then perhaps we can start to see the beauty in each individual creature that we have the opportunity to meet. Or perhaps we will just learn to appreciate more the opportunities that we're given to witness dancing butterflies. I really love this piece because, again, it speaks so deeply of being in the present, being in the moment, and appreciating what you have as it is. I think it's just a stunning rite. And what did you think of it, Pam?
I think this is just absolutely beautiful. I like how, you know, it captures the beauty of butterflies, but it also captures the beauty of art and how each one is an individual and the way that it's expressed. I really like these butterflies are special. They were dreamed up in some artist's mind. You might find some that are similar, but these are one of a kind. I also liked the one that they dance to music only they can hear. You know, I think that really that line speaks volumes about individuality. And also I really like brilliant colors, the songs their hearts sing. You know, the whole idea of just listening to that music inside your heart that gives you joy. Beautiful, right, and very well done.
Oh, I love that comment because I think it's a good reminder that sometimes we do need to listen to what brings us joy and not necessarily what maybe what society says should bring us joy or our family or whatnot. Sometimes we need to have that tune of our own that we dance to, and that's okay. So stunning comment, Pam. And up next, we have Breeze by Mosh Pit Politics. And I'll give this one a read. Not that I'm trying to take all the short ones, but Breeze by Mosh Pit Politics. All this tree came from the smallest seed. We're all to stay, but made to leave. We see the nicest themes inside our dreams. We all have a place despite the tiniest squeeze. Even leaves from the highest trees were made to fall with the slightest breeze. End poem. And Pam, could you start us off with your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm sitting on mute laughing at you because I'm thinking, I'm starting to see a pattern here.
You said you were tired. I just want to make sure that you stay awake. So
there you go. Always a good friend. No, I totally get it. How we
I got your back, Pam.
Right? When you only have two people and you go back and forth, I totally get that. You know, another just wonderful brevity. And I like how he starts out with all this tree came from the smallest seed. You know, the whole idea that anything big started out as something small. It's a wonderful write all the way through. It's honestly one of those that's difficult to separate the lines. I like from the where it says, from the highest trees were made to fall with the slightest breeze. It gives the thought of, you know, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. Or even, you know, I feel like part of what those lines are saying is that if we spend too much time climbing on the backs of other people to reach the top of the ladder, whether it's the corporate ladder or the social ladder or whatever, eventually we're going to find ourselves falling with nobody willing to catch us. But I really felt there was some nice use of an extended metaphor and some social commentary within this brevity. It was very thought-provoking and very well done.
Oh, absolutely. And I agree. While there's nothing that really separates one line from the next, I think that's really kind of poignant in a piece such as this, because you follow along it almost like that floating leaf is that fluid thought almost that that our brains tend to make, you know, the way in which we connect strange things that don't seem to relate, and yet they do. But there is that beauty in social commentary, that reminder that the smallest things can create vast change, that a seed can build a tree, that a breeze can knock off the highest leaf, and that sometimes the most beautiful scenes that we see in our dream, we can in some way bring into this world, because there are inventions that were thought up merely because of a dream. So I think this is a really poignant piece on the impact that small things can have. So Stunning Right by Moshpit Paulson. And up next, I'm going to have you read Your Freckles in the Sky by Silent Dreaming.
All right. Your Freckles in the Sky by Silent Dreaming. And it goes like this. Hecate, goddess of witchcraft, ghosts, and night, can you color the stars like long-lost eyes? Springtime green is a comforting sight, and reverse dreams from untimely demise. Artemis, virgin maiden of the stars, do you not ache for the touch of true love? I can still feel his caress from afar, in the pale flesh light of the moon above. Oh, sweet Selene, I beg you stay awake and let my poetry enchant night's glow. May Eos rest for fleeting young love's sake as I make peace and let the starlight go. Dear Gaia, may I haste a mortal sleep and join him in Acheron, persona fee, end poem.
Beautifully read, Pam. Thank you so much. I think that this is really fun in the way in which this is done. So Hecate's daughter is Persephone, and so for it to start with the mother and end with the daughter, I think is kind of poignant. The fact that it's kind of like, often when we think of people gazing into the sky, there's always the cliche of two lovers gazing into the same sky, even though they're split apart. And in many ways, this reads as a mother longing for their daughter. There's an understanding of why this has to happen, that even though it may be from love, there's still that pain from that separation. And I don't know why this is sitting with me, but there's a TV show on Netflix called Sex Education, and one of the background storylines is one of the students' mothers is a drug addict, and she takes her youngest daughter out of the kind of like social services because she can't stay sober, and she's going to run off with her daughter, and as she's about to run off, the student finds her and takes her back to the foster care. And the mother is the one who gives up the child. And it resonated with me so deeply as a mother because there's that pain and that sorrow and the mother's plea of take her before I change my mind. But the way I am, it made me think of what would happen if I were to be in that situation, if I had to give up my daughters. And I'm not sure that I could. And yet here is this poem that speaks of that deep, painful longing in which Hecate gave up her daughter, who now is going to a place that may not even be able to gaze upon the same sky as she, even if it is for this idea of love and romance and beauty. I think it's just really poignant and beautiful, right? And I love the way in which the lore is kind of woven around this and the play of the various gods and goddesses and characters, if you will. So really quite a stunning, poignant write. And what did you think, Pam?
I think this is just absolutely beautiful. I do like the use of mythology and how it has a very prayer-like quality to it. And it's wonderful all the way through, but I have to say that the declarations to Artemis and to the moon goddess Selene, I thought were absolutely the best. I feel like within those two stanzas was this whole idea of please understand my pain, please understand how much I love and how much I need back that love. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Oh, that was such a beautiful comment, Pam. Thank you. And I agree. It does have a kind of that prayer-like quality, like that gentle plea. And I think that really does make it such a poignant piece. So thank you for that. Up next, we're going to have Sink or Swim by Gypsy Lady 13. And it goes like this. Stealing Pam's catchphrase there. I have often heard it said, no rest for the weary. I'll sleep when I'm dead. And it's truth, isn't it? Life doesn't permit smoke breaks. If you pause your progress, you will never reach the goal. If you stop and linger, you become bogged down in the mud and muck, and you're just stuck spinning your tires. Sometimes I consider giving in, giving up, stop struggling to swim upstream, and let currents take me to whatever lies downstream from here. But life is sink or swim. And I will not drown, just feet from the shore. End poem. And Pam, would you give us your thoughts on this piece?
Absolutely. I really like Gypsy Lady 13's poetry, and she's such a nice person. I like how she starts out with that quote, I have often heard it said, no rest for the weary. And then she kind of, she expands on the whole idea, and it's a really great take on the picture prompt there. Or I don't know if that was the prompt, but the picture goes really well with the poem. And it's, I like that it's the whole idea of that you have to keep moving forward. If you pause your progress, you will never reach the goal. If you stop and linger, you become bogged down. I like that this is all about remembering that you have to keep moving forward if you're going to reach that goal. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Oh, that is absolutely true. I think a lot of times there's the temptation in life to say, oh, I'll get to it eventually. But if we get stuck in that rut of eventually, then we never may reach those goals that we want. We may never get to where we want to get to because it pushes everything else and life doesn't have those smoke breaks like Gypsy Lady says. And I think that this is such a beautifully penned piece because it speaks to a truth that we all know and yet so often we don't want to believe or we don't want to believe is real because when we start to realize how quickly life moves, it does mean that we won't just be waiting in the water for a bit. We will eventually drown. It will keep going without us. And when we hit the rapids, we won't be ready. So I think this is just really poignant and beautiful in both its simplicity and yet in the way it addresses such a well-known idea that we often fight against. Which is perfect because if you fight against a river, you're going to drown. I think this is really stunning. So thank you for this, Gypsy Lady 16. And up next, we have a poem called Campus High by Naomi Sarah. And Pam, would you give this one a read?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. Oh my goodness. I don't know about you, but I have every intention of sleeping in tomorrow. So. I just felt like an
I mean, hour. I would love to sleep in tomorrow, but I have a tax deadline coming up in 12 days.
I know.
So it's okay.
That's not something you can do. I'm very thankful. But most likely,
it's that
I'll tell
river.
You that my intention is to sleep in, but I have one of those brains that will wake me up at like 7 in the morning with like rushing thoughts of everything I need to do.
I feel that so deeply though, because there's been a couple, because I work from home Mondays, Thursdays, and Fridays usually. And there are definitely moments where I'm like, I could sleep until 9. I could do it. But as soon as like 7:30 rolls around, my brain is like, you're going to be late. You're going to be late. You don't have anywhere to go, but you're going to be late. And so then it's like, well, I'll just go and make myself a cup of coffee and slowly start my day.
Exactly.
So.
All right. Well, this is Campus High by Naomi Sarah, and it goes like this. Toking up behind the Faculty of Literature, pondering, if Professor Plum will teach creative writing or summon Miss Scarlet with a letter, visualizing Miss Peacock killing the mockingbird, not with the revolver, but her blue-tinged purplish flamboyance, realizing the mockingbird was us, stumbling back into class, wondering if Colonel Mustard looked just a bit like Shakespeare with a candlestick and poem.
Oh, what a wonderful read, Pam. And I really think this is such a fun write because, I mean, obviously they're getting high. They're toking it up behind the facility of literature. And yet here is this play with the game of Clue. The idea of what these characters would be like if they were to be real, the way in which you see them in the game is that, you know, what kind of character would these people have? And so I love this play, not just with the
what happened
literature.
To our Miss Victoria?
Did I really
Victoria,
disappear
or
again?
She must, I'm guessing she must have dropped again or her headset. So
no, I'm
while,
here.
Oh, there she is. Okay.
Can you hear me now?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I didn't go anywhere. I didn't do anything. This happened.
You disappeared. Yeah, no, your voice went your voice went somewhere.
We were talking about Clue, and so I needed us to have a mystery.
Right.
So really quickly, what I loved about this is that it mixes the idea of those thoughts you have while you are perhaps on some herb, the idea of the game of Clue with how each character might be related to the creative writing. So they kind of hodgepodge this idea of what would these characters be like mixed with the locality in which they are doing this. So they play on that literature, To Kill a Mockingbird, the Scarlet Letter, the way that Colonel Mustard looks was just a bit, you know, a bit like Shakespeare, even with a candlestick. I love the play on these literary classics with a game that is more nefarious. Though arguably a lot of those works do have some pretty nefarious tones to them. So I think this was just really fun and playful. So absolutely delightful. And what did you think, Pam?
Yeah, this is definitely fun. It's clever. It's intelligent humor. I like that she mixed the Clue game characters with, like, as you said, the classic literature, like, or summon Miss Scarlet with a letter, visualize Miss Peacock killing the mockingbird. You know, the whole thing, it's just a wonderful sense of humor all the way through. And definitely one of those writes that makes you smile. So very well done.
Absolutely, it is. All right, well, we've got about 11 minutes left in the show, and we are out of writes. So why don't you let me know what you have going on this week, and we'll get to bed a little early.
All right. Sounds like a good plan. Well, let's see. We have Rex's After Midnight Show, 12:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time on Tuesday. And for that, we are featuring poetry inspired by the quotes of Denis Diderot. Phil is hosting Twisted Tuesdays this week, and her topic is poems that have to do with autumn. So that should be a wonderful show. That's 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, Tuesday. Then Wednesday, for the Art of Seduction, I'm going to be hosting that with Mika. We have carryovers from a couple different shows, plus some from a contest I ran that called Pleasured Senses Curled in Smoke, where the prompts are all focused around cigars. What else do we have? Me and you, first of all, let's see. Thursday, we have, what is that show? Double Helix, and that topic is imposter syndrome, feeling like I think that'll be an awesome show. I have a contest running for Break On Through, which is Friday, 12:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time, and that has a piece of artwork called Trying to Catch the Sun by Carol Apple, and you can break that or just simply the phrase trying to catch the sun. What else do we have? Oh, my goodness. I tell you, there's just so much good stuff coming up. I know me, you, and Rex will be doing together one of our seriality shows, and I have that contest running, which features last statements or quotes, words of serial killers. And then on Friday for Parts and Our Part Saint, Saturday, 12:30, me and you are filling in for Faziana, but she has this contest running, which does need right. That features the artwork of Sean Koss. That looks like some pretty cool stuff. I have to say, just make sure, everyone, to check out the contest that Late Night Poets hosts and hostesses are running. Make sure to check out the topic boards in the group, because there's always something for everybody's taste when it comes to contests and show topics.
Oh, absolutely. And I am super, super excited about the seriality show that's going to be on the 15th. You were mentioning the Carol Apple contest, and I know that we have an apple in the seriality contest. And so I was going to be like, and speaking of apples, that
right?
That humor. but no, I think we definitely have some really cool stuff that's coming up. This week, Nika and I are going to be doing Strange Magic After Midnight. We're going to be finishing up the Weaned on Poison contest, as well as the Cost of Heartbreak. And then the following week, we do have Black Lace Diaries. The topic is to be decided, but that should be posted here in the next few days. We may be doing a little bit of fantasy play. So keep an eye out for that. And then, of course, I think it's going to be really fun, but I'm super excited for the Halloween week that's coming up in a few weeks. So I'm just saying there's going to be really fun. That's all I've got. So for now, I'm going to say thank you, Pam, so much for joining me tonight, for helping with the show, for all the poets who allowed us to feature their works tonight. And of course, Robbie and Frank, who just kind of hung out on the board with us while we did our thing. Truly, you guys are the ones that keep this show going. So thanks for hanging out with us. I hope your guys' week is amazing. And until next time, good night.